You are listening to The Holistic Voice with your hosts, Austin Vitaliano and Jordan Reynolds.
Hey everyone, welcome to part two of Nathan Gunn's interview. If you haven't listened to the first part yet, I would recommend doing that before going on to this episode. So Austin, how's this week been for you?
It's been great. Hey Jordan, good to hear from you. Let's do a quick update from the hosts. Yeah, so back in February, we started talking about this. I had a competition that was for the National Association of Teachers of Singing. It's for the NATS competition. I started in the local auditions and was fortunate enough to place first. Through that, I went to districts in Baltimore and went up against the big wigs over there and actually again placed first in the district auditions. Could not believe it. Mom and Dad were in cloud nine, like, oh, I'm so proud of you, son. Mm-hmm. And we did a cool winners recital, and I sung Danse Macabre by Saint-Saëns, and it was a mouthful of French. It was great.
I love Saint-Saëns' art song.
Saint-Saëns
does some great stuff.
It's so fun. Yes, yeah. And it was a Danse is really cool because he took it from an orchestral score and then put it into piano and just, I mean, fireworks of a song. But yeah, so it was really fun. And then 2 weeks ago, went to the national auditions in Northfield, Minnesota at St. Olaf College. So that was an amazing opportunity to see what everybody was doing from all around the nation. Everybody came together, and it was really cool. I can say that now. I mean, I was in the practice rooms freaking out because everybody's like, la, 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 la.
Sure.
But it was a really, really cool competition, and I got through all the semifinal rounds, got to the finals, and the judges, they were really looking for some, I think, bigger voices. Mm-hmm. 28, 29, and 30-year-olds won those first, second, and third place jobs. But the thing is
dang
the biggest take, I know those dang old people.
I'm You're basically that age now.
Gosh darn it, Jordan.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the biggest takeaway from the competition was you get to see what's out there, what rep you want to be doing, what you could see, you know, how your voice is going to develop in the next 3 to 4 to 5 years and what the judges are looking for. I mean, what kind of comments, you know, you always have to take everything with a grain of salt when you're at a competition, but it's a cool networking opportunity. It's cool to meet people, but I was so happy from the experience.
Sure. Yeah. Regardless of result, and like with Nathan's first episode that we talked to him about, you know, he got third place there, but it pushed him on to do some really great things later. I think he said it led up to like the Lindemann program. Was that right?
It worked out well for
like
him.
Like networking is a huge part of competitions. It's not just about getting that, you know, first place or that prize money.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm just so excited to keep this interview going because he talked about kind of his earlier career and then he really delved into, he said he made his bones and now he could be free to be who he wanted to be, which is mm-hmm. really relevant to the, you were saying, the conversation that we even had with Rachel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a lot about figuring out your identity as a singer and just having that be first, you know, but because if you're focused on pleasing the crowd, then you actually turn them off. So he has a lot to say about that and dealing with failure. So part two is awesome. And a quick update with what I'm doing. Most of it has been driving across the country. So that's been really fun. So before I even went on the trip, I sang with the Cathedral Archdiocese Choir at Fenway Park, and I feel like that was the best way to leave Boston.
So jealous. Yeah. So jealous.
It was so much fun singing the national anthem, and it was really nice. It was mostly volunteer, of course, the choir. Richard Clark did a great job getting some great singers involved there, so it was a blast. Really a Boston way to end Boston.
Yeah, for sure.
So that was cool. The next day, I went to Niagara Falls, so went over to Canada with all the stuff in my car. So I was super worried they'd like stop and just look through everything because I packed that thing to the brim. And, you know, it's one of those things that like I'm not sure I'd be able to pack it again and right. still have everything fit. So luckily that worked out. Niagara Falls was gorgeous. If anyone goes, you have to do the cruise part. It's required. And you have to go to the Canada side because it's amazing. And you don't get as much.
Don't wear your fancy clothes. Don't wear your fancy clothes because you get drenched, right?
Yep, you get absolutely soaked. Okay. So, yeah, but that was a highlight for me for sure, was going to Niagara Falls. I also stopped in Palmyra, the Sacred Grove. It's an important thing for my church. And so that was really fun. I have some family history there as well. Next day, I went to Chicago. Before that, I went through Cleveland, went to the Rock Hall of Fame, got to see some handwritten lyrics by Billy Joel, like where he scribbled out stuff on my life.
Casual.
Yeah, right? And got to see some of his songwriting process with that. Got to see the piano that the Beatles, Paul and John, because I'm on first name basis, of course, wrote. Yeah.
Your royalty.
I Want to Hold Your Hand, and We Can Work It Out, and Eleanor Rigby. That was really cool. So I stayed in Chicago, which is your hometown, and got to see some cool stuff. Just like did a little tour there. Then stayed the night in Minneapolis. Went to Minnehaha Falls. It was gorgeous. Not quite as cool as Niagara Falls, but was beautiful. And got to see some of the lakes nearby. There, Minneapolis is just such a cool city, as you know, because you were there for competition.
It's the same day as you. Thanks for saying hi. No, just kidding.
Did you go to the Sculpture Garden?
No, I just went to Minnehaha.
Yeah, Minnehaha was beautiful. The Sculpture Garden's really fun, too. It has, like, that huge spoon with the cherry on it.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so got some great pictures of that. And went from there to Mount Rushmore, and then Mount Rushmore through Montana after my car broke down. Well, car didn't break down. The AC broke down, which is basically the same thing because it was so hot.
You can't do that. Absolutely not.
And stopped in Idaho. And here I am writing songs and getting ready for my record to be recorded in the summer.
Ah, love it.
Yeah.
Well, when you get those first couple songs, maybe you could debut one or two. Give a little trailer teaser on the show.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that'd be fun.
That'd be fun. It'd be a good time. But cool. Well, you've checked off a lot of boxes this week.
I know the bucket list is looking a little short. You ready to go to part two?
Yeah. Why don't we dive in?
All right. Diving.
I want to go into the Lyric Theater program that you've created at Illinois for a little bit as well. But before we go into that, there was a really important point that you mentioned. It took you 25 years to have the freedom to be yourself and really, you know, take these liberties that you say. One of the biggest things at the conventions, the biggest themes that we've heard from a lot of the people that came up to us talking about questions that they had as a singer on their paths is, at what point do I stop only listening to my teachers at conservatory and how I should be performing or presenting myself as a musician? At what point did you transition from, okay, I have an education and I have a schooling, to having my own voice and being confident with my own interpretation and stop listening, you know, exactly to what everyone is saying, you know, jump high, high kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, everybody is a little bit... Everybody has a slightly different path when it comes to that. One of the big transitions for me in having to take responsibility for example, my vocal health was when my teacher died. And I thought, okay, this is all on me now, and I get to make those decisions. There's, especially in classical music, it might be the same way if you're coming up through musical theater or anything, or even, you know, anything that has enough of a style or tradition that people, you know, they feel a bit bound by it when you're young. It's one of those things where having experience, succeeding and failing, allows you to know how comfortable you are with failure. I think... this is where it gets a little bit interesting. You have to make a friend of failure. You have to have enough courage in your art making to be disliked by people. And what that eventually leads to, that's not the end of the story, but what that eventually leads to, in my opinion, because where does courage come from? It comes from overcoming fear, right? And what is that fear? Fear of being disliked, fear of being a failure, fear of not having any money, fear of whatever, right? Death. But honestly, the opposite of fear, and I think this is true, and this sounds mushy, but it's true, is love. And I think what eventually happens is you come to a point where you're like, I don't know if I can do this anymore. You might be a little jaded, or I don't know what the next step is going to be. And you persevere, and you persevere. And then eventually you take that step. It pushes you to the point where you care so much, it's not that you don't care. You care so much that you're willing for nobody like you. And then you go out and you're yourself. And you don't worry about what you sound like. You don't worry about it being right. You don't worry about any of that stuff. All you worry about is communicating to the audience that is there, and you worry about the now. All your practicing and all that stuff, you have to be confident you've done that work. And then you come out and you do it. And every time you do, you have to be willing to be disliked. And there's certainly going to be people who do dislike you, but that's not your job. Your job is that's their job, right? Your job, and the only way you can know for sure that you've done your work is if you've come to that point. If you're trying to please everybody all the time, it only gets you so far. And you can only be so happy with that. But once again, that takes a lot of strength. You can't fake it. I mean, you really have to just not worry about people disliking you. And that's some people never get there.
Yeah. What advice would you give for people to get to that point? Because when they're getting hit by failure after failure, what do you subsist on? What is it that's giving you that strength?
That's the tough thing, right? You have to, I think you know, how much do you listen to people's advice and how much do you ignore it, right? If people are saying, you really don't sing in tune, do you just go, yes, I do, right? You just don't hear me. You don't hear the art in my out-of-tune singing. yeah, there certainly has to be some humility in there, and you have to know, you know, when it's right and when it's not. I think your best indicators are health, right? How does it feel when you're playing your instrument, when you're singing, or and can you honestly say you've done the work? You know, do you have an idea about what you're talking about when you're singing that particular piece? Do you know what you're saying if it's in a different language? For sure. You know. I know you know. Everybody knows they know or don't know, right? So you got to ask yourself those questions. Those are the simple questions. And then I think it's that kind of combination of health and honesty will be a good guiding measure, you know.
Can you talk about a few failures that helped shape you in your life?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I've always, as I said earlier, been an advocate of new pieces, and I've learned over the years to kind of through bad experiences to sign on to things once I knew more about them. You can't always trust that your thought about what the composer or the librettist or whatever wants to do is necessarily what they're thinking. And there have been a couple of times where I've, you know, agreed to do something and done my best at trying to make it happen, and it has not been successful. In that sense, they were productions that were failures, and I was very vocal about it. Or no, I wasn't very vocal about it. I was very honest about it and about why I didn't think it worked. And of course, that makes no friends with the people that paid for it, right? And you have to, you know, for me, you have to suffer those kinds of consequences. There are, you know, contracts that I turned down for recordings that I just thought were against who I am, even though it was sort of, you know, good opportunity to, you know, get a big, you know, recording contract with a company that wasn't doing that, offering those things much anymore. But, you know, it'd be the same old thing that everybody had always heard, and And then what do you have when you're left with doing something that you don't believe in and spending your time doing it? It's like you're selling your soul in a lot of ways. The biggest failure for me, I think, was the fact that in some ways what happens is, I was talking to a old friend of mine, today, about this. You can, if you're not careful, you can unwillingly hand over your sense of, not integrity, but kind of sense of, and this is about music, right and wrong, or quality, sense of self-worth, to pleasing the industry you're in. In some ways, it's like a golden handcuffs. It's successful. You're in the flow of it. And you're doing what people want. But I think I did that for a little bit too long, because I'm telling you very clearly, I think, what it is that I think is valuable about music. And I've always thought this. But for a while, I thought, well, no, actually, what this intendant and this intendant and this manager and this manager and this person who's been in the business for a very long time thinks is right and good and proper is what it should be. And what I thought didn't matter. And if you start buying into that, eventually you're not going to have any idea about what you want anymore. And I think that can lead to certainly personal crises. And for me it did. And I just needed to full out stop, figure out what I was doing, stop being on the road, come home, and, kind of clean up my life a little bit and focus on why I'm doing what I'm doing. And sometimes that's not a very easy question to ask yourself, but, it goes back into how do you know if, you're doing the right stuff. Follow your feelings. I mean, you know how you feel, really. I have plenty of times where I've like blown a high note or something. Talk about that. Or just going out there and be like, wow, I did, like, God, I wasn't really paying attention. You're like, whoa, that sucked. But I've done that. Almost near death experiences on stage.
Any big forget the words for big important events or anything like that? That kind of stuff. You're pretty good at memorizing. You said
I'm pretty good at memorizing. But you do these long shows. There was a couple of good stories. Well, the last one was actually at Wigmore Hall, and I forgot. Everything was in English, and I completely blew the last line. I don't even know what I said. It was just nonsense. Sounded like English, but it wasn't. And I'm just, I was just like, if you want to know what I said, what I was supposed to say after the show, please come and talk to me, and I'll tell you what that line was. But one time we were here at Ravinia, I was singing a show with Mandy Patinkin, and Mandy and I were, it's hot, it's like 105 degrees, and I'm in a suit, Mandy's in his t-shirt and sweating all over the place, and we did the thing before we did the little bits of the little encore pieces was Somewhere Over the Rainbow. I have never thought those words made sense. I have never understood. I mean, think about it. Just go through them in your mind and think, away above the chimney tops,
We'll put it in the bio description.
Yeah, all that, yeah.
Of the episode.
The trouble melts like lemon drops away above the chimney tops. What does that mean? That's where I'll find somewhere.
It's Santa Claus. Santa Claus is over the chimney tops.
Something like that, right? So I started singing it. I was tired. It's like an hour and 45 minutes into it. And I'm like, somewhere over the rainbow, bluebirds fly. This is the beginning. Birds fly somewhere. And I just stopped. I'm like, I'm sorry, Mandy. I forgot the words. I don't know the words. He's like, what? I'm like, yeah, I forgot the words. This isn't the show, right? They're like five.
During the show.
This is during the show.
Oh, my gosh.
So at the end, he's like, do you want me to sing it in Yiddish? I'm like, you know this in Yiddish? He's like, yeah. So he starts singing it in Yiddish. And I swear it was what everybody loved the most.
Well, no, and that's, and thank you for being a human being on stage.
Right?
Because some people, if they flub on something, they just close in, and then it makes everyone else nervous.
I know.
How do we help you? And it's just a whole thing. So you gotta, have a sense of humor about that.
Human beings mess up.
Yeah. Yep. We make mistakes.
We make mistakes often. They can, actually, I think, if I read this physics book the right way, the reason why we exist in a material world is because there was a little mistake, and there's a little more matter than there is antimatter. So it's not such a bad thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it all works out.
Yeah, great things can come from it.
Yeah, I make mistakes all the time. God, I would love to have somebody scan someone's brain who is in the middle of some sort of show where they're moving and fighting and singing and memorizing and remembering. The amount of brain power it takes to do all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and link it to anything else. So I wanted to, if you, I really wanted to talk about the program that you,
yeah, sure,
you
and Julie, yes, yeah,
and Sarah.
It is 5:05, yeah, so you know, like.
Oh yeah, sorry. Yeah, it is. Yeah, like we don't want to okay, keep you where you're at right now.
No, we can do a few more minutes.
Yeah, how? Great. If you have the time, we'd love to talk.
That's
about
it.
That.
Yeah, and then we'll kind of close it down. We don't want to keep you for too much longer.
All right. Well, the program is called Lyric Theater at Illinois, and a number of years ago, the director of what was then the opera division was retiring or leaving, and so the director of the School of Music came to me and he said, would you mind redesigning this program? So I said, sure. So, you know, obviously I consult with Julie about all this stuff, and we talked about it, and we thought, what does this business need? And my first thought was, well, why don't we model it after what I've done with my career, because I've had such a wide variety of things that I've been able to do. You know, it's been a transition from, you know, into HD broadcasts. You have to act on stage. There's musical theater that, you know, that I've been able to manage pretty successfully, and new music and all that. And so that's what we did with a focus on health, healthy movement, healthy brains, because the business can really fry some people's nerves, and healthy vocalism. So we put it all together. We started working. Then, of course, this is a state-run university, so it goes through everything we propose when it comes to creating a new major. It has to be approved not only by the university, go through the School of Music, the College of Fine Applied Arts, the university, then the state government, and then it has to be approved on that level, which it was. So we had our first, after really running for about 4 years, the program, we had our first freshman class this year. And it's an undergraduate degree in lyric theater. So the idea is, one, they're taking lessons to learn how to sing, whether it's an Italian art song or an aria or whatever. I like songs more. Or musical theater pieces. They take voice lessons, theory classes, dance classes, acting classes. We'll probably, you know, some of the theory requirements are a bit heavy, and everybody's trying to renegotiate those so that it's more focused towards somebody who wants to have a performing career. But we work on, you know, their language skills, their basic music skills, and their ability to move, act, dance, sing, all that business. And then their sophomore year, we have them come in. We have their dance teachers, their acting teachers, write a review of what they think about that particular person. Then they sing for us, a jury. They do a classical piece, a musical theater piece, a monologue. And then we talk to them after they've written about what they see themselves doing in the future. Because we want them to be able to say, and this is what's happening, I'm really interested in classical singing now. I thought I wanted musical theater, but I think I want to pursue a little bit more opera and, you know, and sort of art song. Okay, great. Other ones will say, you know, I'm into composition. I think I'm going to move in the direction of composition. I really think I want to be more of an actor than a singing, you know, an actor who sings rather than the singer who acts. So I want to move to the Department of Theater. Other ones who are really into directing and kind of continue singing, but also want to maybe try their hand at stage direction. All these different things that a kid, because they come in freshman, everybody thinks they want to be musical theater because that's all they do in high school. So they come in and they have the ability and the skill set to be able to make an educated decision about how they want to spend the next, their juniors and seniors year before they either go to graduate school or head to Broadway to try their luck, because you kind of have to do it at that age.
Yeah, I think that is a really amazing curriculum.
Yeah.
Because that is such a formative time.
It is.
And a lot of people just jump in like, well, I think I like classical music, or well, I think I like musical theater now. So I love that you're building that. I think that's a really wonderful curriculum.
And I don't see why you can't be an excellent dancer, singer, actor. I mean, anybody can be an actor, right? But a dancer, yeah. No, but you should be able to do all those things. And I think it makes a person much more fulfilled if they can. I was talking to Hershey about this. He has a house in outside of Florence, and I was thinking, one of the things I really want our kids who want to pursue musical theater to have is an ability to speak another language. And I figure Italian, right? Because it's the language of music. There's some, the Italians love musical theater. If you speak German, you can kind of get a gig in Germany because they do like Cats and everything else in German. Svini tot. Svini tot. So they do all that stuff in German, but I was thinking, why not have a summer where we take them and, do some crazy for you, do some tap dancing, do some music, American musical theater, and they teach us the language of love, right? You know what I mean?
I love it, yeah.
Yeah. So, but with that knowledge, I think these young people will be able to make a better choice as to how they want to spend their lives. And they'll have way broader options if they so choose. And then, like I said, some become composers. And great. Yeah. There's so many opportunities to be a part of the world of performing arts without necessarily having to be the one standing out on stage.
Right. And I feel like there's this... So we've talked a lot about failure this time together. And I think there's this, fake form of failure that people see, I went down this career path and then I decided I wanted to be a composer. And now I failed somehow because I didn't do the producing.
That's just not true.
And it's just,
that's not true.
And that's not what we're talking about.
No, we're talking about failure. No.
Yeah, yeah.
No, that's, I always tell my students, I'm like, look, don't look at it as, there's a kind of failure where like Michael Jordan used to talk about how, why is he still playing basketball after he's accomplished everything? He's like, I'm kind of curious if I can still do it without wanting anything, right? If I can still perform at a high level. And I always tell my students, don't think of it as failure. Think of it as contrast. You need shadow in paintings to see what you're looking at or to make the face of a certain thing. And those shadows tell you where to put the light. And that's all it is. And your life is going to be a long, interesting life, and you are you, and there's no other you. So you're going to be a complicated individual, and certain things will resonate more than other things. You don't know if it's not for you unless you blow it. Really, if you really give it your best shot and go, I really hate singing in front of people. I mean, I'm good when I'm by myself, but God, I get nervous and I start to sweat and I panic. I can't breathe. I don't think it's for me. How would you know unless you sang in front of somebody, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So yeah, I tell them it's contrast and it's really okay to fail. And the thing about Illinois is that it's a little bit easier to fail when you're in between some cornfields and soybeans fields than in the middle of Manhattan, where everybody thinks they have this, it's high stakes, and they think, no, you can't fail. Everybody does. And we try to let them know that.
I love that. I love it. Well, we've gone over time. An amazing conversation. Any last minute pieces of advice or any things that you'd love anyone to hear? I mean, we've talked a lot.
I think overall, trust your instincts when it comes to making music, when it comes to singing and playing instruments. Really go by feel and not by sound always. If it feels healthy, it probably is. And, be yourself. If you're a 17-year-old singer out there, sound 17. Sound like a healthy 17-year-old. That's a good thing, And just remember, thank God you're not as good as you're going to be at 17. Because that's pretty scary.
Yeah, that would be terrifying. Yeah. Okay, awesome. Nathan, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Happy to talk to you guys.
This was amazing. Yeah, this is great.
Happy
thank you.
Happy to talk to you guys.
Well, thank you to everybody on The Holistic Voice for tuning in to part two of the Nathan Gunn interview. We had a lot of good conversation. We hope that you had some good insight into how to develop your own voice as a singer, how to be unapologetically you. You can't please everyone. You can't worry about people disliking you and what that means. And how failure isn't a bad thing, how it shapes you as a singer, etc. If you have any questions for Nathan on anything that we talked about in the past two episodes, Why don't you send us a message on the Holistic Voice, and we'll see if we can't reach out to Nathan to see if he can answer any of those questions for you. Like we said, he's a very down-to-earth guy, and I think that he'd reach out. What do you think, Jordan?
I think that's worth a shot.
Absolutely. Well, you got to keep tuning in. We are going to take the most advantage out of the summer and try some new experimental things on the podcast, maybe try some more live streaming videos, as well as experimenting with segments on the podcast. So tune in to the Holistic Voice. We have a lot of content for you, and we're so excited for you to join us.
Yeah, see you soon.
Bye-bye.